Good morning. Welcome back.
Morning.
Okay, we're up to Parshas Kisavo. I think these are Parshas that most people never learned at any point. I don't think it's been part of any school curriculum. And then they're not the most exciting Parshas, but there are, and some of them are Kisavo, the Tochacha, other important things. But I just wanted to focus on a few psukim that I think are very important and probably are not so well known. Second page 1072, the beginning of Perek Chav Zayin. The Torah says, Pasuk Aleph, Vayitzav Moshe v'ziknei Yisrael, asa'am le'mor. Moshe and the Zakenim, the elders of Yisrael, speak to the people, command the people, saying, Shamoras kol ha'mitzvah, asher anochim etzaveschem hayom. You should watch over, you should observe all of the mitzvah that I am commanding you today. Interesting to note that most of the time in the Torah, when Moshe speaks, he does not bring the Zakenim along with him, or if he does, the Torah does not mention that the Zakenim are speaking as well. But here it's Vayitzav Moshe v'Ziknei Yisrael. Part of the speaking role seems to be for the Zakenim also. Need to understand why that should be. And Shamoras Kol HaMitzvah, Mitzvah is written in the singular, why should that be? Which I'm commanding you today, again, probably referring to the fact that Sefer Devarim really is a summary that Moshe Rabbeinu was giving them of all the mitzvos. So you should watch over and observe all of the mitzvos. So far, so good. Pasuk Beis. V'hayo, and it will be, Bayom Asher Tavruas HaYardein, on the day they will cross over the Jordan River, El Haaret Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lach, to the land that Hashem gives you, V'hakimoso L'cho Avonim Gedolos, and you will erect for yourselves large stones, besadita osam basid, and you will cover them with plaster. Okay, so it's a mitzvah. The Torah says that you have to, when you cross over the Jordan River, you take large stones and you cover the large stones with plaster. Why are you doing this? So the Torah continues, v'chasavto alehen, on the stones you will write, eskol divrei haTorah hazos be'avrecha. Everything that's written in the Torah as you cross over. Why? L'man asher tavo al aretz asher Hashem elokecha nosein lecha, that you should come to the land that God gives you, eretz avas chalav udvash, the land flowing with milk and honey, kasher diber Hashem elokei avosecha lach, as God has commanded you. So you're supposed to take these large stones, you set up these large stones, we don't know how many large stones, but you take more than one, I guess, it's written in the plural. You take these large stones, you set them up, and you're supposed to write the entire Torah on the stones. The stones must be pretty big. If you can write the entire Torah on them, we'll have to still understand this even better. Now, what does the Torah say? And when you cross over the Jordan River, you'll set up for yourself these stones that I'm commanding you today on Harival, and you will plaster them with plaster. Sounds a little bit repetitive. This is kind of what the Torah told us two psukim ago, that when you cross over, you should put up these stones and put plaster on them. So why is the Torah repeating it? Why does the Torah need to tell us twice? The only thing which seems to be added in this pasuk is the detail of Har Eval. We know Har Eval. Har Eval is the mountain on which the klalos were going to be. Again, when we had the brachos on Har Grizim and the klalos on Har Eval, so the curses were given on Har Eval. So that's the significance, again, as far as we know, of Har Eval. But that seems to be all that's added in the pasuk. So why would the Torah repeat the fact that you have to, when you cross over the Jordan River, set up stones and put plaster on them? And then the Torah says, "Uvanisa shal mizbeach Hashem alkecha," and there you're going to make a mizbeach. Mizbach avonim, a mizbeach out of stones. So is this the same stones? Is it different stones? It's not 100% clear. Are you taking the stones and making a mizbeach out of them? Or no, just you also have a commandment to make a mizbeach. Lo sanif alehem barzel, you're not allowed to put anything metal to use to cut the stones for the mizbeach. Avonim shleimos tivnei, you have to use whole stones. That's mizbeach Hashem okecha, this altar for God. V'halisa alav olos Hashem okecha, and on it you should offer the korban ola to Hashem your God, v'zavachta shlamim v'chalta sham, and you will slaughter shlamim and eat them there, v'samachta, and celebrate ifnei Hashem alokacha, and celebrate in front of Hashem. And then what do you do? And you will write on these stones all of the words of the Torah, Ba'er Hitiv. All of the words of the Torah that are explained well. So very well clarified. So again, the Torah is repeating something that the Torah told us earlier. We almost have the same parasha twice. The Torah opens up and says that when you cross over the Yarden, when you cross over the Jordan River, you have to take these large stones, you have to set up the large stones, and you have to cover it with plaster, and you have to write the words of the Torah on these large stones. And then the Torah repeats, you have to, when you cross over the Jordan River, take the large stones, set up the large stones, this time on Har Eval, and you put the plaster on them. And then the Torah tells, then they have a little bit of an aside about making this Mizbeach on Har Eval. And then the Torah says, and what do you do with the stones? You write on the stones the entire Torah. Again, must have been fairly large stones. So this is what we need to try to understand, is what's the story with all of these stones. If you look at Rashi, just in terms of Ba'er Hitev, what does it mean the Torah added that you have to write on the stones and explain it? Ba'er Hitev b'shivim lashon, in 70 languages. You're talking about fairly large rocks. If not only are the rocks large enough to write the entire Torah on at once, but you're going to translate it into all 70 languages. So 70 times the entire Torah, seemingly, will be written on these stones. So what's going on here? So I guess the opening question was, why is Moshe gathering the kingdom here? Why is it Vayitzav Moshe v'Zikne Yisrael? Why is Moshe not speaking alone? Why is he speaking together with the elders of the people? So the answer would seem to be that, again, there are other mitzvos that are dependent on being in Eretz Yisrael, but this is one mitzvah where what the Torah is telling us, and the entire instruction for the mitzvah takes place the second you enter into Eretz Yisrael. As soon as you cross over the Jordan River, you have to do this. And Moshe Rabbeinu knows that he's not going to be there when they cross over the Jordan River. Moshe Rabbeinu knows that somebody's going to be filling the void, and whether at this point he knows that it's going to be Yahushua, or whether it's going to be the Zekanim, certainly the Zekanim, the elders, are going to have a role in keeping Klal Yisrael together and making sure that they observe that the Torah calls the mitzvah. And the reason that it calls it the mitzvah in the singular, I think Rav Hirsch writes, is just to show that now that we're getting towards the end of the Torah, it's important to realize that it's not 613 discrete separate commandments, but they form one corpus of Torah, and in a certain sense that they're all intertwined. And therefore the Torah can even use the singular language to refer to all the mitzvahs. Watch over the mitzvah. So Moshe Rabbeinu realizes that they're going to be going into Eretz Yisrael. This is going to apply then. This mitzvah, which is going to apply the second you go into Eretz Yisrael, needs to be said by Moshe, but along with those who are going to be leading Bnei Yisrael at that time. Those are going to ensure that Bnei Yisrael are keeping the mitzvahs, and those are going to ensure that this mitzvah take place. But what are all these rocks about? So Rashi tells us, and Rashi in Pasuk Beis, Vakimosa Lecha, you'll set up for you. Again, this is the first time that the Torah is telling us that you're setting up large stones. Vakimosa Lecha Bayardain. You're going to set up stones in the river, in the Jordan River itself. As you're crossing through, you'll, I guess, you know, take a little break, and you will set up large stones in the river. V'acharkach, and afterwards, Totsiu Misham Acheros, you will take out other stones. Bitivnu Mehen Mizbeach Behar Eval. And then you will make a Mizbeach on Har Eval, which is the second thing that the Torah told us in Pasuk Dalet, that you're going to take stones and you're going to make a Mizbeach on Har Eval. So it's two sets of stones. Continues Rashi, Nimtei Sata Omer, so what comes out? Shlosha Minavanim Hayu, that there were three sets of stones. Only told us about two sets of stones. So Rashi will fill in the gap. Shtemesrei Bayardain, there were 12 stones that were in the Yardain, in the Jordan River. Ukenegdon Begilgal, and there were another 12 that were in Gilgal. Ukenegdon Beharaval, and another 12 in Haraval. Kidiisa Bemeseches Sota Lamedheyam Abeis, as Chazal tells in Meseches Sota So Rashi filled in numerous details that, again, we don't really know at this point where they come from. First of all, he tells us that we're talking about 12 stones. The Torah never said anything about 12 stones. The Torah just said stones, large stones, and the Torah said it in the plural. The Torah didn't tell us how many. Rashi knows, again, based on Chazal, that it was 12 stones. How did Chazal know that it was 12 stones? So that we'll have to try and figure out. They didn't take it from nowhere. Where did Chazal know that we're talking about 12 stones? And then we have two psukim here that tell us about the taking out of the stones and making monuments out of them. But Rashi tells us that, in fact, that there were three sets. There was one set in the Yarden River itself. There was another one in Gilgal. The significance of Gilgal: Gilgal is the first place where Bnei Yisrael encamped after they crossed the Jordan River, which again makes a lot of sense. So that could be understood as you're going through the Yarden, which would be set up the stones in the river, or Vayob Avrachem, after you've finished crossing the river, now we're on land again, so now you should set up the stones there. And then the second pasuk, which told us this Harevel piece, Rashi tells us is a third set of stones. Again, and he says that he kind of relinquishes responsibility. He says it's not me that's saying this. Kedisa b'Maseches Sota, as Chazal tell us in Maseches Sota. So how do we know that all of this is true? So we'll see the Gemara shortly, but the truth is that basically the Gemara is working off the Navi in Yehoshua. Again, Yehoshua is going to be the leader at the time when they're crossing over, so he's going to be the one that has to actually fulfill this mandate that the Torah has of building and putting together these stones. And again, it seems to me that this is a full-fledged mitzvah. It may not count in terms of the 613 mitzvot, because at least the Rambam has a rule that any mitzvah which isn't constant for all generations can't be counted as one of the 613 mitzvot. So since this is going to be a one-time mitzvah, that when you cross over you have to do it, it won't count technically as one of the 613. But for that generation, they had a full-fledged mitzvah to perform as soon as they crossed over to build this, to do something with these stones and to write the Torah on them. So what happens in Sefer Yehoshua? So I got a little bit of background. I don't know how familiar everybody is with Sefer Yehoshua. We probably learned it a little while ago. But basically what happened was this. Bnei Yisrael are getting ready to cross the Yarden. But they have a problem which they have experienced in the past, which is that they need to get from one side of the water to the other, and they don't have a boat. So they need to, they face this at Yamsuf, and God split the sea for them. So what's going to happen when they're at the Yarden River? So Yehoshua, after hearing from Hashem tells them that the Nisim are going to take place, prepare yourselves. And he tells the people, prepare yourselves tomorrow, Kimachar Yaseh Hashem Bekirbachem Niflos, Hashem is going to perform wonders in your midst tomorrow. Then when Yehoshua gives instructions to the Kohanim, he says, Vayomer Yehoshua LaKohanim Lemor, Yehoshua tells the Kohanim, saying, Su'u es Aron HaBris, take the Aron Kodesh, the Aron HaBris, the Ivr Lifnei Ha'am, and go in front of the people. So the Kohanim are going to be leading. And they went and they led in front of the people. Okay, skipping a little bit. And he instructed the Kohanim, telling them, again, they have the Aron. When you get to the edge of the Jordan River, by Yarden Ta'amodu, stand in the Yarden. Stay put. Okay, and then a few other instructions. God will say things, okay. Hine Aron HaBris Adon Kol Aretz Over Lifneichem by Yarden. The Aron HaBris, the Aron HaKodesh, belonging to the one who's master of the entire world, Over Lifneichem by Yarden, is going to precede you, is going to go in front of you, in front of the Kohanim, through the Yarden River. So again, it's the Aron is leading, followed by the Kohanim, followed by the rest of the nations. V'haya kinoach kaposu aglea kohanim nosero nashem adon kohanim meyardein. The second that the feet of the Kohanim went into the Yarden River and hit the ground, The water of the Yarden breaks. The water that's going down from above stands still. So again, it sounds like, I'm not getting about all the details right now, it sounds a little bit different than what took place at Kriyas Yamsuf. Again, Kriyas Yamsuf, we were dealing with a stationary body of water. So in order for the water to split, in order for them to pass through, the water had to be split in half. The Yarden is a flowing river. So in order for Hashem to split the flowing river, it wasn't necessary to do any miracle with the water below the people. The water below the people could keep flowing. Basically, you just needed to build a dam. You just needed to make sure that whatever water was going to be flowing downwards towards Bnei Yisrael would stop. So just in terms of practically, it was a little bit of a different type of split. And that's what Hashem did. He made this nace that the water just stopped flowing at that point. Again, I guess the water flowed out on the bottom. But again, that was just the natural process that God put into place, continuing. But that's not a fundamental point, but maybe it is. But it's more the details of Yoshua. Fine. So as soon as they're in, this is going to happen. And basically, the people then followed through. And the Kohanim stood in that place. The Kohanim had to stand in the place. Again, the same place where they first put their feet into the Yarden River where there was water. Then the water stopped. The Kohanim had to stand in that place until the entire nation finished crossing. And when all the people finished crossing over the Yarden, Hashem says to Yoshua, saying, take 12 people, each echad, each echad, each shavet, one from each shavet, command them, saying, take from inside the Yarden, from where the Kohanim are standing, take 12 stones from the Yarden River, from the place where the Kohanim are standing. So here's where Chazal knew we were talking about 12 stones. V'havartem osamimachem, and you will cross the Yarden with them, you'll carry these stones across. V'nachtem osam b'malon asher talino halayla, and you will bring them to, we now need malon as a hotel, it just means the first place where they stopped to rest for the night. They didn't take it to the inbal with them. With the first place where they stopped for the night, that was where they're going to take these stones. Okay, so Yoshua did it. They put them on their shoulders, fine. Why all this? So this should be a sign in your midst. When your children later on ask, what are all these stones about? You'll tell them that the Aron split, interesting to note, in front of the Yarden split in front of the Aron. That it was the miracle happened really vis-a-vis the Aron, in this case of the Yarden. The Avro by Yarden, as soon as the Aron went into the Yarden, it split. May Yarden draw you have anima ilas ikonos and shalom, and they should be a remembrance forever. Okay, and they did what they said they were going to do. Then in Pasuk Tes it says Ushtemesre Avonim Hekim Yehoshua Besocha Yarden. And there were then 12 rocks Yoshua set up in the Yarden. In the Yarden itself, Tachas Matzav Raglea Kohanim Nosei Aron Abris. In the place where the Kohanim were standing, again, which is probably close to the edge of the Yarden, because as soon as they stepped in, the water stopped flowing. But in that spot, he also set up 12 stones. Vayusham Arayom Hazeh, and they're still there until this day. And then the story just concludes that the second that they finished, Vahiba Alosa Kohanim no Seron Brit Hashem Mitoch Yarden, as soon as the Aron and the Kohanim stepped out of the Yarden, Nitku Kapos Agla Kohanim Al Charava, and the feet of the Kohanim once again touched the land, Vayashuvu Meha Yardenim Komam, the water of the Yarden went back to its place. And it continued flowing as it normally did. And then it tells us, where did they camp? Vayachanu ba Gilgal. They camped in Gilgal. So far, Rashi seems pretty good, right? We have two sets of stones. We have the stones that Yeshua commands the people based on Hashem, the 12 stones, to take out of the Yarden and bring with them to Gilgal, and apparently to set up there. And we have the 12 stones that Yeshua set up in the Yarden itself. Rashi tells us there was a third. What's the third? The one that the Torah probably hints to, and the Torah says that you have to set them up on Har Eval. So where is that? So that is in Yehoshua, in the 8th parak. In parak Ches in Yehoshua, it says that they set up a mizbeach. They set up a mizbeach on Har Eval. After the whole episode with Achan, and they. And then Yehoshua goes and he makes a mizbeach, which again, it seems from our parsha that the one on Har Eval was a mizbeach and supposed to be used as a mizbeach. Kasher tziva Moshe Eved Hashem et bnei Yisrael kakasu b'sefer Torah Moshe mizbeach avanim shleim Moshe asher lo nifalei barzel. The Navi itself tells us that Yehoshua was fulfilling that which Moshe had commanded in the Torah that was written by Moshe, by Alu Alav Olos, Lashem Vayizbechu Shlamim, and they brought Olos and Shlamim. And what else do they do? There's something still missing. They haven't written the Torah on the stones yet. That's what it said. Vayichtov Shom Alav Onim Es Mishnei Atoras Toras Moshe Shekasav Lifnei Bnei Yisrael. And then they wrote on the stones the Torah of Moshe that he had commanded Bnei Yisrael. So again, based on this seems to be exactly what Rashi is telling us, that there were three sets of stones. The problem, however, so that was just again a little bit of background in terms of where it's all come from. Chazal really got everything from the Pesukim, but the problem is as follows. Rashi did not tell us that he knows any of this from Sefer Yehoshua. Rashi told us that he knows it from the Gemara in Sota. The problem is that the Gemara in Sota doesn't say this. The Gemara in Sota says something similar, but there is a major difference. The Gemara in Sota, I think it's on Lamed Hei, tells over this whole story, but it says that a nace took place. What was the nace? The nace was that there were 60 mil, about 60 miles between Gilgal and Har Eval. Okay, so what's the nace? Says the Gemara that day when they crossed over the Yarden, so they had set up the stones in the Yarden River as Yehoshua had said. They brought the stones and set them up in Gilgal. And then on that very night, they took the stones from Gilgal and they carried them 60 miles to Har Eval, and that very night, it was miraculous that they were able to get there so quickly, that very night, they set up a mizbeach on Har Eval. So there are only two sets of stones, not three sets of stones.
That was the first night, Gilgal was the first night, not the Malone.
The Malone was Gilgal.
So then you said that's where you stayed overnight. So the next day they carried them 60.
Chazal say it was that night, whether they went back and forth or they rested there for a little. That was the first place they set up camp. Whether they set up camp for the entire night or they set up camp for part of the night, that was the first place they rested. Whether they rested for the night, maybe they rested for the afternoon.
I'm counting three. Why am I one off?
Because those stones from Gilgal, right away, they took apart and they carried those very stones 60 miles.
But they set them up.
Right. Right. They set up three times. They set up three times. But Rashi said Shlosha Mine Avanim Hayu, that it was three types of stones, seems to be three sets of stones. So we didn't discover America here. Everybody asks this question on Rashi. It's all the Mefarshim on Rashi have no idea what Rashi is talking about. So the Maharal in his Gur Aryeh's Perish on Rashi, he wants to explain similar to what you were saying, that no, they set it up three times. So if they set it up three times, that's what Rashi is talking about. But the problem is that Shlosha Mine Avanim sounds like three types of stones. And worse, is that Rashi gets the language of Shlosha Mine Avanim from the Gemara, and the Gemara there is referring to three sets of stones. Not our three sets of stones. The Gemara mentions an extra set of stones that was set up in Arvos Moav a while ago before this. Again, just the Gemara happens to be summarizing a few different stories at that time. I mean, the Gemara Sota really is dealing with everything from the Meraglim to entering Israel, and all the different miracles about the size of the fruits and all that stuff. All is recorded in those few pages of the Gemara in Sota over there. So worse, besides the fact that the language doesn't sound like that, is that Rashi seems to be paraphrasing the language of the Gemara, and the Gemara is using it to refer to three sets of stones. One problem is that it's three different sets of stones. So the Abarbanel says that there were three sets of stones, and he doesn't mind disagreeing with Chazal. Again, well, the problem with that in its own right is for a different discussion in terms of whether it's appropriate at times to learn Pshat in Psukim and the simple understanding, even if it's not what Chazal tells us is true. But it doesn't seem, either way, it doesn't sound like what Rashi is telling us. It doesn't answer Rashi. I think it's important to note that the Abarbanel does say that there were three sets of stones. It is interesting, there is a little bit of an aside, but there is a machlokas in the Mefarshim. What was the purpose of the stones that were set up in the Jordan River? The ones after, when you crossed over, so there the Navi told us in Yahushua, the purpose is that when your children come and they see that there are stones here, they're going to say, hey, what are these stones all about? And you'll tell them, oh, Hashem's, when the Arun came into the water, Hashem split the Yarden, and Bnei Yisrael were able to cross through. Oh, one other detail, just because it's probably not so well known. The Gemara does say in Sota, just from the end of the story, so how did the Kohanim get across? The Gemara says that when the Pasuk says that their feet touched the ground, it was the ground on the start of the Yarden where they began. Not that they walked through the entire, again, they started on the east, and they had to cross over to the west, right? Yeah, that's correct. Right, they had to walk from the Jordan, which is on the eastern side. They had to cross to the western side of the river. So they were standing in the river towards the eastern side. The water split, and Bnei Yisrael walked over. Now Bnei Yisrael are on the west. After Bnei Yisrael went through, Chazal understands from the Psukim that the Kohanim went back to the eastern side of the water, and then the water came back down. So how did they get across? So Chazal say, based on the Psukim, that the Aron carried the Kohanim across the Yarden River. So it's not exactly a flying carpet, but a flying Aron, which transported the Kohanim across the water.
What's wrong? They were supposed to write the mitzvot. Did they write?
So the only time that we have recorded, that they wrote it is when they built the Mizbeach at Har Eval. So it sounds like it's at the end of the process. So whether that fits in exactly with our psukim, we'll have to try and understand. But they did write it at the end.
Were the words all around the stones?
Was what?
Or were the words only on one side, or were the words?
I assume anywhere that they would fit. We'll discuss the words. We'll discuss the details soon.
And why is there a memorial here and not Yom Sof?
I think we'll get to that at the end, if I don't judge and remind me. But I think it's fundamental to just understanding the entire episode, but I think we'll have a better understanding if we appreciate the interplay between the different things that are going on here. We have the writing and the building, and we'll try and put it all together. So okay, so that end of the piece of the story, just so we should know the story as it happened in the Navi, according to Chazal. But there is an interesting machlokas amongst the Mefarshim. What's the purpose? So the Navi told us the purpose of the rocks on the other side of the Yarden is so that when the later generations see, they'll be told these are there to remember that Hashem performed this nace. What was the purpose of the rocks inside of the Yarden River? So it's the machlokas. Rashi says that what Rashi seems to be saying is that right away, as they're crossing over, Yahushua appoints people to take the rocks with them, because that's what it says. They transported the rocks, they put them on their shoulders, they carried them along. So the problem is that now, in the place where the Kohanim are standing, it's very muddy, because they don't have the rocks that they were standing on. So Rashi says they had to replace the rocks just so that the Kohanim could stand in a place that was more befitting them. The Rabbag says, and there's going to be a little bit of difference in understanding. So according to Rashi, the rocks are really flat. You can't go, as much as it says in the Navi, which is what makes this a little bit difficult, is as much as it says that it's there, Ad Hayom Hazeh, it's there out of Yom HaZeh, but you can't see it because it's in the water. So there might be 12, you know, special humongous rocks that are somewhere by the Yarden River, but they're not really visible. Right, the Pasuk said, "Ushteim aseh avin mekim yoshua b'socha yarden takas masav agla kohen nosem bris nosem avon habris vayusham ad hayom hazeh."
Can I ask you why the Kohanim went back east? Why didn't they?
Why they did?
Yeah, why didn't they follow him?
I think they were commanded to. Why were they commanded to?
To round the boys' travels.
The Chazals understood that's what they were commanded to do. Why it was? Probably just to make the Nes even greater. Again, it seems to be that a major focus of this Nes, whatever the reasons are, maybe if Hashem one day will learn Sefer Yehoshua, we'll figure it out. But until that point, it seems to be that there was one of the main focuses of all of these Nisim was to show the unique character of the Torah and the significance of the Aron. And that's why it wasn't that somebody put a staff into the Yarden and the Yarden split. It wasn't like what happened with Moshe, where maybe the idea was just that they should have Emunah Bashem. Here it had something to do specifically with showing the Koach of the Aron. So certainly by having the... So, yes, if the Aron would have transported everybody over the water, would that have been a big... I don't know. Maybe it would have been bigger. Maybe it wouldn't have been bigger. It would have been certainly at least as large a miracle, maybe a larger miracle. That's not what God chose to do. He chose to do it in that way. But in the end, the miracle is certainly, hammered home by having the Aron transport those who normally go along with the Aron. So I don't... Chazal are really just learning it out of the Psukim. The details are in the Gemara there of how they understood it. But I don't know exactly why. I don't think they chose, maybe we should just go back and hope that a miracle is going to happen. I think they
could have happened in the beginning.
Right.
Why go back and forth?
Right, so I'm not sure. Apparently he wanted the people to cross through, and he wanted that to happen with the Aron, and he wanted the Kohanim to pass over, and he wanted that to happen through the Aron. And he wanted but he wanted also to show, again, it seems to be, that the Kohanim needed to step out of the Yarden, because he wanted the water to come back and show that everything was because of the Aron, and again, the Kohanim, who are the ones that are watching over the Aron, the fact that they were in the where the water should have been. More than that, it's hard to know why he did it. So the Rabag says that these rocks that were done in the Yarden were they were more of a monument. They weren't just simply to replace the ones that were missing, but they were there to be some sort of monument which stands up, which would certainly make it a little bit more visible. But now it's not clear whether they're assuming that this fulfills any of the mandate of what the Torah says. Was it that they understood Vayoba Avrochem es Hayarden in the Yarden or after the Yarden? But either way, that's the way they understood what happened. So again, we don't have a great answer for the question on Rashi. We understand, based on the Psukim and Yeshua, that the rocks, again, the simple understanding of the Psukim and Yeshua is that there were three different sets of rocks that were set up. But again, Chazal understood that two of those sets were the same, that the rocks that were in Gilgal were then taken to Har Ebal, which would, again, it would satisfy our Psukim, but it still remains difficult why Rashi said what he said. Okay, so that's one piece of the puzzle. The other question is, what's the writing of the Torah on the rocks all about? So Chazal told us that the Ba'er Heiteh, which is said the second time, again, the Torah here also repeated that so again, if the repetition is for two different sets of rocks, so we're in much better shape, because at least the Torah is repeating it for a purpose. It's not really repeating it. It just happens to be the same commandment, but two times for two different sets of rocks. In terms of what Torah is written there, so again, Chazal said, as we saw in that Rashi, that Ba'er Heiteh means that all 70 languages were written on the rocks. So how could it fit? How could it fit? I don't know. How could it fit? It seems like one of those paintings, like where you have like the entire Seder written in a Seder plate, but nobody can see any of the words, so there's no point to that. So here, clearly, Again, if it's written in 70 languages, I guess this is just one important point. If it's written in 70 languages, then obviously whatever the point is in writing the words of the Torah on these rocks is not just for Bnei Yisrael, because if it was just for Bnei Yisrael, write it in Lashon HaKodesh, write it the way the Torah was given. The fact that it's written in all the other languages tells us that there's some sort of significance in whatever is taking place at this moment for the entire world to see, and not just for Bnei Yisrael. So the Rabbag says, well, maybe I understand there's enough room to write the entire Torah on the rocks. But he says, there's no way there's enough room to write it in 70 languages. So he's kind of stuck, but the Torah is not so bothered by it. Just the words of the Torah from Bereshis to Leine Kol Yisrael, he said you can even stick all the crowns on the letters. He's not bothered. That can definitely fit on the rocks. The Ramban says, either they were really, really, really big rocks and it could fit, or he says it was a nace. He's going to throw it up his hands. There's nothing to do. There's no other way to explain it. It was miraculous that somehow all 70 languages were able to be written on these 12 large rocks. The Ibn Ezra and then others try to maybe take a different approach, and that is to limit what was written on the rocks. And if you limit what's written on the rocks, and not the whole Torah was really written on the rocks, then you have a lot more space for things to be written on the rocks. So the Ibn Ezra quotes from Rav Sadia Gaon that not everywhere. It doesn't mean that the entire Torah was written on the rocks. Again, what was this whole parsha? How did it open up? Shamoras kolam mitzvah. You have to watch over all the mitzvot. So what was written there? He says the mitzvot were written there. The same way you have, let's say, one of these books that has all 613 mitzvot, listed, and it'll have, three or four words that basically describe in a mitzvah. That's what we had. We had the basic description of all of the mitzvahs, and that's what was written on the rocks. And if you want to go with Chazal's 70 languages, those mitzvahs were interpreted into and were written in the other languages as well. And that certainly helps with the problem of how all of them could be written there.
But not if it says a kol divrei Torah. If it just said et haTorah, one thing. But it's very specific.
Right. That's definitely the way, again, the way most of the verse understood is that it is the entire Torah, and certainly the way it's written in Yeshua is even worse. Right, I think in Yeshua it said, Ta'ichtob Shem al Havonim Eis Mishnei Toras Moshe Asher Kasav Lifnei Bnei Yisrael. Certainly sounds like the exact Torah, the way it was written by Moshe. Yeah, that's a simple understanding. They were just trying to be able to answer these questions as best as possible. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman says, I'm not 100% sure what he means. If he means one possibility of what he means would answer this question. What he says is that what was written in the 70 languages was just the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, because that basically sums up what the nations of the world needed to know about the Torah. So what he means is that in Lashon HaKodesh the entire Torah was written. And again, the Rabbag even didn't have a problem with that fitting on. That was able to fit on the rocks, just from Bereshis until Leinei Kol Yisrael. And then all we have to write is that you have to, you can't worship idols, writing that 70 times. That's not so much more to fix, and that would also answer your question also, as well. Because the Torah doesn't tell us that everything is written 70 times. The Torah says that everything is written, then by Eretav, it's explained well. B'shiv and Lashon Chazal tell us. So maybe the 70 languages that it's explained well is explain the basics. The nations of the world, who obviously the other languages are written in, they don't need to know all the details. If they come for the details, we'll figure it out then. But in terms of the basics, that would be enough. So if that's what he means, I'm not sure if he means that even in Lashon HaKodesh, all that was written down was the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, then that would just be, another possibility similar to what Rav Sadia Gaon said, and probably even more difficult. The Ksav HaKabbalah quotes from his son. The way he writes is very strange. I don't know who his son was. I don't know so well who he was, but he writes, Ubini HaMaskil, my son the Maskil, Rav Shmuel, said that kol can sometimes mean cloud. It doesn't have to mean all. I guess this would also answer that question. That kol doesn't always mean all. Kol can be like a short way of writing something which encompasses more. And sometimes when you have broad rules or a broad topic, that can include and that can be referred to as kol. So what does he say? What's referred to as kol? And he brings that proof from other psukim where sometimes kol doesn't mean everything, but it means an overarching principle. So what he says here is maybe it's shema, because it has Kabbalah Samachas Shemayim, and staying away from Avodah Zarah, which he says could be written with the first two Dibros. So he says maybe that's what was written on the rocks, is that Parsha Shema or the first two Dibros, and the Kol is Klal Divrei HaTorah Zos, the general principles which guide the Torah. So you're not so satisfied with that. I'm not so much either. But that's what he wants to say. He says, he does say, Vinei al derech hapshat, according to simple understanding, then it probably would mean... Probably for Rabbi Akiva. The... I mean, voracious al-deinei kol Yisrael. So, and he says the idea is, v'chasavta al avanim, and maybe this will be at least a little bit of what this is all about. He said it's similar to v'chasavtem al mezuzos beisecha. He says maybe, and then he wants to suggest that maybe it wasn't written down on the rocks at all. Because he says to write your mezuzah on the mezuzah. We don't write our mezuzahs on the mezuzah. We write our mezuzahs on a piece of cloth, and we stick it onto the mezuzah. Again, the mezuzah is the, I don't know, the lintels one on top, so I don't know. The thing that goes up in the doorpost. The mezuzah. The mezuzah and the mashkof. It's an English word for it, I'm sure, also. So the same way that's written, he says maybe it was really written on parchment. And then the parchment, and I guess on the parchment, it's probably easier to write very small than it is to start engraving things or painting things onto stone. And then they stuck that on. I don't think he really thinks that it's true, but he suggests that, you know, just in terms of the pshat, just in terms of the basic understanding of the psukim. And then most fundamentally, the Hamikdavar just says the reason that it's repeated and what emerges from the two types of writing, of this one basic writing and one Ba'er Heitev, is that, again, the basic lesson is that something is taking place and there's a significance to what's being written here for the Jews and for the rest of the world. And it's there are two different aspects to what's going on. The Gemara has a fascinating machlokas as to how it was written. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda said that they wrote the entire Torah on the rocks, and then they plastered on top of it. And Rav Shimon says they plastered first, and then they wrote on top of it. So Rav Shimon asks Rabbi Yehuda, what's the purpose of writing it if you're going to cover it with plaster? How is anybody going to read it? Lidvarecha, heich lamdu umos shaloso azman Torah. How are they possibly going to learn the Torah? Again, there must be a purpose in writing it there for everybody to see. But how can they do it if they can't see it? So he answers, Omar lo, Bina Yisera Nasan Bohem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem gave them a deeper level of understanding. Vishigru Notirun Shelahen, and they sent their experts, Dikilfu Esatzid, and they were able to remove the plaster, Vihesiuhu, and then they were able to copy it. And because of this, their fate was sealed to be doomed for forever. Why? Because they had the Torah. Everything was given to them, and they had the opportunity to learn the Torah. They even had their scribes that were somehow copying the Torah from what was written on this covered with the plaster, if they were able to remove the plaster, and they should have learned Torah. It's just very unclear what the purpose. Again, according to Reb Shimon, it's also true. They could have come and they could have copied the Torah, and they still would have had the Torah. So it's not 100% clear what exactly Chazal are trying to get at in terms of explaining this way. The Hamikdavar, I think, says somewhere here. Maybe not. The Marsha says. What the Marsha tries to say, again, I don't want to go into this too much, it's an interesting machlokas to note, maybe to think about some more. What the Marsha tries to explain in his Divrei Agados is that, according to Yehuda, they actually wanted to give the other nations of the world more of an opportunity to potentially be exposed to the Torah. And when you have it, something which is open. So according to Reb Shimon, so they plastered it, and then on this plaster, they wrote the words of the Torah. So it was there for anybody to see. When you have something which is public for everyone to see, so nobody goes and sees it. Right? It's just the way of the world. Anything which is out there, and everybody has the opportunity to do it, so they're not going to send their, people that walk by will say, okay, it's a nice, it's Mount Rushmore or something. I don't know, it's a nice tourist attraction, but it's nothing more than that. So the words of the Torah will never get back to the nation. But once it seems like something which is, encoded, there's something there, we don't know how to get that, we're going to send the archaeologists, and we're going to send the scholars, and they're going to have to go, and they're going to write it down, they're going to copy it and bring it back, so then the nations of the world have no excuse anymore. You saw the words of the Torah, it was brought back to your houses. You didn't even have to travel all the way to Gilgal or to Harival, wherever exactly they put those words. You didn't have to do any of that. And that's the significance, and that's why, according to him, he wanted specifically, or Yehuda understands that Hashem wanted it to be that they would send the experts and they would, do all their research, they would bring the words of the Torah back and then see what happens. See if at that point they recognize that Hashem is the one who's in charge of the world or not. And then the Barbel has one, he has a different understanding really of the entire parsha, and with that we'll try to wrap everything back together. He says the reason that the Torah repeats everything is because the first time it's reflecting on something which is voluntary, and the second time is to make it obligatory. And what he says is, and this hopefully will explain a few of the loose ends that we've had, is that the way of the world is that when a nation is going to take over, going to conquer a new country, as soon as they enter into the country and now they think they're there to stay and they're hoping they're there to stay, the first thing that they do is they leave something which is going to leave their imprint. They're going to put up some sort of monument, and on it they're going to write, okay, so-and-so was the general, and he's the best general ever, and on this date and this time, we destroyed, thousands and millions of people, and we're going to be here forever. And you make sure that as soon as you enter, you establish in a way that people are going to see forever and ever, people are going to be able to see that you're the one who's in charge. So Hashem understood that when you're going to come over the Yarden, what are you going to do? You're going to put up this. You're going to put up this stone, and on this stone, what are you going to do? So you're going to probably write, we destroyed it, Sichon and Og, and we got out of Mitzrayim, and we've accomplished all this. Hashem says, no, that's not what I want you. Once you're putting up that stone anyway, you're doing something which is not obligatory, you're doing something which is voluntary, on your own you want to put that up, I'm going to tell you what you should do with that stone. What should you put on that stone the moment you enter into Eretz Yisrael and you're planning on being in Eretz Yisrael forever? That's called Divrei HaTorah Zos. The Torah needs to be written there. It needs to be established from day one that what the Torah is about, and what Bnei Yisrael's relationship with the land of Eretz Yisrael is about, is rooted in the Torah. And it has to be that it's rooted in the Torah. And therefore, the second you cross over that Jordan River, the first thing you need to do is you need to set up this monument. And the way the psukim are written is what he refers to, and others refer to as a klal uprat. That sometimes the Torah writes that way. That the Torah will say something in general, okay, you're going to cross over and you're going to put up this monument. And then the Torah gets more specific later, and the Torah says, and you're going to write all the words of the Torah, and it's even going to be Ba'er Heitev. What's the significance of it even being Ba'er Heitev, of it being for the entire world, is that it needs to be, and maybe this is the idea also of why, let me take a step back. What's the purpose of making a Mizbeach out of it? That's included. And the Mizbeach on Har Eval, that's also related to this point, is that Har Eval was the place where the curses were being told to Bnei Yisrael. And what's the last of the curses? Arasher lo yakim es kol divrei Torah zos. Cursed is the one who doesn't make sure that the Torah is going to be done. So on that place where it's Arasher lo yakim as divrei Torah zos, where cursed is the one who doesn't hold up the Torah, over there, we're going to be making, we're going to install a Mizbeach. Over there, we're going to show that we're not going to let that happen. Now that we've entered into Eretz Yisrael, we're going to make sure that we're here to stay. How is that going to happen? Because we are going to support the Torah. We are going to make sure that the Torah is going to be what defines Eretz Yisrael. And that's really what the entire idea of what this parsha is about, and the way Yeshua played it out as well, is that it's at that moment when they're coming into Eretz Yisrael, that the nace happens through the Aron. because it's the connection to the Torah that's the most fundamental for Klal Yisrael to realize when they're entering into Eretz Yisrael. And then you enter in, you write down Kol Divrei HaTorah Zos on that monument where everybody else would write, we're the greatest nation, we have the strongest army, and we're going to, you know, be strong and everything else, and nobody's ever going to kick us out of there. I don't want you writing that. That's not what a Jew is going to write on that monument. What you write on the monument which says we're here to stay in Eretz Yisrael is called Divrei Torah Zos. And don't just write it for you. You write it for Shivim Lashon. You have to make sure that all the nations of the world, everybody realizes that Bnei Yisrael is here to stay, and because of the Torah. And that the relationship that Klal Yisrael has with Eretz Yisrael is one that is everlasting, but is also one that is contingent, and Bnei Yisrael are required in order to support their claim to Eretz Yisrael that it should be rooted in the Torah. So as they cross over the Yarden, it's that you need to write down the Torah, you need to write down the words, the Torah needs to be Be'eritiv, it needs to be a message which is clear for the entire world to see. Did I answer the questions? I think you answered the question. So I think that's the idea. I think it's a parasha which we don't often look at, but fundamental, again, as the mitzvot are really drawing to a close and we're getting into the later stages of the parashos here, the Torah is saying what's the first step to take when going into Eretz Yisrael has to be implementation of the Torah. And then if we have the Torah and strong in Eretz Yisrael, then our bond and our connection to Eretz Yisrael is something that is impenetrable and something which will last forever.